So I was thinking about this story during the week, and what came to mind was one of my favourite TV shows. Okay, I absolutely love a programme called The Traitors, and I am probably one of the biggest fans, and I have just binge watched another series from America. And if you don't know the show, we've got 22 contestants who are taken to a Scottish castle. Some of the 22 are chosen to be traitors. The others are named as faithfuls. And it's the job of the faithfuls to try and root out the traitors and remove them from the game. They also have to complete a series of challenges to win money, and they have to work together. And they vote them out one by one. If there are any traitors left at the end of the game, then the traitors get to steal all the money in the prize pot and keep it for themselves. And if there's any faithfuls left at the end of the game, then the money is split equally between them. And in our passage today, we come across a traitor. Not one that's got to be found out, but one that everybody knows about, and everybody is completely powerless to do anything about. Because in the time of Jesus, tax collectors were seen as traitors. These were Jewish people who were employed by Romans to collect the taxes from their fellow Jews. And as you can imagine, they weren't very popular. So then I started doing some digging around as to what a tax collector actually was. And I was surprised by what I found out, because there were two types of tax collectors who lived around the time that Jesus lived. One were general tax collectors, and they collected taxes on property and income. There was also a poll tax, I can imagine that was very popular, that Jews had to pay whether they worked or not. It was a tax for simply existing and living in the Roman Empire. In addition, you had to pay 10% tax on all the grain that you grew, 20% tax on all the wine you produced, and the taxes could be paid with either money or goods. And these taxes were pretty much fixed, and therefore there wasn't a lot of room for the tax collectors to collect more than what was owed. People knew what they had to pay. However, there were a second type of tax collector. And this type of tax collector were told that they could collect duty on imports and exports. And they had little booths that they would set up randomly along roads, docks and bridges, and could tax about almost anything that moved along the road. You could have been walking the same path for years, and all of a sudden a tax collector pops up, sets up his booth, and starts charging you for walking down the road. The tax was more if you had a cart, because you had to pay per wheel of the cart. And if the cart was pulled by animals, then you'd pay for the animals as well. The tax collector could demand traders open up their bundles of goods and tax whatever he wanted. If you got angry at the tax collector for dumping your possessions all over the road, he could tax you even more, and there was nothing that you could do about it. There was very little control by the Roman government. Only the tax collectors and the Romans knew what the tax rate actually was, and this kept changing. So the tax collector could charge the people anything they wanted. The Romans would tell the tax collectors how much they had to pay, and anything else they collected was theirs to keep. So it's not surprising, bearing this in mind, that tax collectors were despised, hated, cut out of society by other Jews, and often seen as traitors. So in our story today, Jesus is in Capernaum, and he comes across Levi, later known in the Gospel as Matthew. And he has set up his booth and is collecting taxes. And one of the interesting things I found in one of the commentaries was that somebody suggested that it might have been possible that Matthew was deliberately kind of following Jesus around and setting up his booth where Jesus was because he wanted to collect more taxes, and that's where the people were. But Matthew would have heard Jesus speaking. And it might have been that Matthew had heard the words of Jesus for himself many times. And listen very carefully. Now, tax collectors at that time were totally forbidden from going into the synagogue. So the only way that Matthew would have heard the word of God is through the words of Jesus. He would have been used to hearing a message that he was doomed and that he was going to hell and it would be impossible for God to forgive him because he collected taxes. But Jesus was teaching a new message, one of love, acceptance, and forgiveness. And instead of asking Levi to go somewhere else to collect his taxes, Jesus actually asked Levi to follow him and become one of his disciples. Imagine the scene when Levi got up, left his tax booth, all his money, and followed. This was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Matthew. He could have either continued collecting taxes with everyone hating him, or choose to leave it all behind for a life of acceptance, love, and forgiveness. But the story doesn't stop there. Jesus went on to have a meal with Matthew and his friends. Now, the only friends that Matthew would have had would have been fellow tax collectors, as nobody else would have wanted to have mixed with him and got to know him. And the Pharisees and the scribes criticized Jesus for doing this, as they believed that if Jesus wanted to be accepted within society, then he needed to hang out with the nicer people in society. Yeah. Let's just think, would Jesus fit into some churches today? Jesus did the complete opposite to many people today. He reached out to everyone, even those that society deemed as being sinful. And he did it in a way that horrified the Pharisees, offering love, forgiveness, and acceptance. I wonder, if Jesus was a member of TBC, whether you would find him inviting a whole load of people that you wouldn't expect to see here.
I wonder how all the other disciples reacted when Jesus spotted Levi and said, come follow me. I mean, he was a traitor. He was an enemy. He was a no good money grabber. And I bet they weren't too pleased at all. We don't want somebody like that in our nice religious group. Thank you very much. I wonder whether they were worried that it was the thin end of the wedge. If we let somebody like that into our group, will he make the rest of us a bit bad too? Yeah, we have a saying in England, don't we, in English, that we say, one bad apple turns the whole batch, or I think in America they say the whole barrel, because they have apples in barrels. And if you've never heard that saying before, what it means is, I think we've got a picture of one bad apple and a whole load of nice ones. You can have loads and loads of nice ones, but if you get one rotten apple in the middle of them, very soon all the apples around it will have started to go bad, and then all the apples around that will have started to go bad, and it spreads. And people in Jesus' time worried about that idea a lot. Don't sit next to somebody that's unclean, because it will make you unclean. Don't hang out with somebody that's a little bit bad, because maybe you'll end up being a little bit bad too. Don't invite round somebody that people look down on, because they'll look down on you too. And of course, sometimes those things are a little bit true. The Bible does warn us about who we allow to influence us. But Jesus taught us that because of God's power, that doesn't have to be true. And he showed us that that thinking is not a good enough reason to exclude people from God's family. It's not a good enough reason to fail to welcome people. It's not a good enough reason to shun people. It's not a good enough reason to reject people. I'd like to try and illustrate that for you. And so I'm hoping you'll be able to see my little bit of chemistry. We all know that we are sinful. And we all know that when we do things and when we say things and when we think things that God doesn't like, it kind of leaves a mark on us. And so rather than being clean and unblemished, we end up covered in stains because of all the things that we think and say and do that we shouldn't. And we also know that those things don't just have an effect on us, they have an effect on people around us. So when you think about us in society, those sins, because that's what they are, don't just affect us, they affect the whole of society around us. But then Jesus calls us to follow him. And when Jesus calls us to follow him, something rather wonderful happens, because he takes us and he washes us clean. And then once we've been washed clean, what happens is that Christians tend to worry, because we think, what will happen if we go back into that mucky society? We'll end up covered in that muck again. We'll end up covered in that mess again. It's going to affect us really badly. We're going to get drawn into that. And so having been washed clean, we're sometimes tempted to keep ourselves really separate. But what Jesus says is go back in to society. Go back in and hang out with those people. Go back in and spend time with them. Because actually God's goodness is more powerful than our badness. And his ability to make other people clean, it's like you put one good apple in a whole load of bad apples, and that's what spreads. That's what the kingdom is about. That's what welcoming people into God's family is about. It's about God's ability to use us to influence others rather than to be influenced by others. Jesus never, ever asked us to stand at the door to his kingdom and keep undesirable people out. Not least because anyone that you consider undesirable is somebody whose company that Jesus desires anyway. And because his power is able to transform every heart, even yours and mine.